Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to church this morning. My name is Jennifer Timpey, and I've been a member here at the church for about 1.5 years. In the pulpit this morning, we have one of our members, John Herndon. You're invited to stay this morning after the worship for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through these doors here behind me. If you're a newcomer here this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you'll consider entering your name on one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of your hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate or handing it to an usher. If you do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities that are going on here at church. If you'd like to learn more about the church and Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in our fellowship hall where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you are certainly welcome to take home with you. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones that you might not know yet. I would like to draw your attention to the announcements and your order of service. We hope that you'll keep these announcements in mind as you plan your upcoming week. And now I would like to invite you to the microphone up front to briefly share any joys, milestones, or concerns that you might bring with you to church this morning. Actually, I missed one. Any announcements for the good of the church this morning? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mary Johnson. I have a couple announcements. First, our fourth Saturday lunch for those in need. It will be next Saturday, and I'm still in need of a few items. The sign-up sheet is in the Kate Worker Room, so please check it and see what you could contribute to this lunch. Secondly, on the Saturday, the 30th of July, I don't see the building and grounds folks here today, but there's going to be a work day, or maybe we could call it a spiffy up the church day if you don't want to use the word work, which sounds too much like work. But anyway, I guess it'll start 8 or 9 and go till whenever some of the spiffying up is finished. And thirdly, on the same day, on July 30th, one of our church congregation members, Marcy Nagel, will be leading a class in ethical eating down at the Jacoby Arts Center. I think it starts around 9. And that's sponsored by the Sierra Club and some other groups. So that's also something you might want to do. Thank you.
My name is Mona Hebert, and I made the announcement last week that I'm going on a medical mission trip to rural Guatemala, Morales, Guatemala. It'll be interesting because I've never been. So it'll be interesting to see what it's like down there. Anyways, I'm going on a medical mission trip down there from August 6th to August 14th. And I am looking for donations of toothpaste, toothbrushes, soap, or if you would rather, just give me a couple of dollars, I'll go out to the dollar store and buy it. And I wanted to thank everybody who's already been so generous in bringing in. I'm getting this big, huge pile of soaps and toothbrushes and toothpaste, but we hope to see about 300 patients each day. So 5 days down there, we should be seeing about 1,500 patients. So. Anything that you can donate to the cause would be appreciated. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Herndon. There are a few items if you are going to Camp Fest that we still need. I think Sayer's been broadcasting for asking for donations, but if there are still a few things that we need that haven't been donated. He is in leadership school this week, so he asked me to make an announcement, and I honestly don't know exactly what is still left. But it's pretty easy items like trash bags and things like that. So if you're on the Camp Fest Facebook list or group, you can go on there and check and see what items are still needed. And if you're not on there and you're going camping, you can leave your email address and you'll be put on that list so you'll know what's needed. Also, the children are starting today in the place, not in here, which I obviously didn't know. So any children who are interested in going to class today can follow me now and we will go there. I'm supposed to be teaching.
And now I'd like to invite you to the microphone to joy briefly any joys, milestones, or concerns that you might bring with you to church this morning.
Hi, I'm Eric Johnson. Just wanted to mention that Team Johnson, Expedition Johnson, went up this morning at 8:30 to Midwest Leadership School. That's Sarah Johnson and Marty Johnson went up to represent us and go to school. So your thoughts and prayers for their safe travel. And also I have a joy because she's going to be gone for a week. So.
But this is being recorded and will be online. Cleaver Van Zandt, minister of this church, first a joy. David Williams and Wade Gibson joined the church last week. Wade and David live here in Alton, so I hope you'll greet them and get to know them. And some concerns. Irene Monting is a longtime member of this church. She has moved from her house to assisted living, and I understand she's not doing particularly well. It's going to be her birthday this week, and Brenda has some cards, birthday cards to sign out in the Kate Worker Room after church. Grace Madison has been dealing with some difficulties, illness, and injury, and she has been out of state with her son and is coming back this week, so she, Grace, may appreciate your cards and letters this week since she'll be home. Rose Lushiko is a longtime member of this church. Rose entered hospice this weekend and was sent home from the hospital. Her family has gathered. She's not doing well. Rose and Joe were married in this space 40-something years ago. This has been a special place for them, and they've been special people to us. So I appreciate your thoughts with that family this week as they move through a difficult time.
The prelude will begin our worship service as Meredith Johnson lights our chalice. To worship is to stand in awe under a heaven of stars, before a flower, a leaf in sunlight, or a grain of sand. To worship is to be silent, receptive, before a tree astir with the wind or the passing shadow of a cloud. To worship is to work with dedication and with skill. It is to pause from work and to listen to a strain of music. To worship is to sing with the singing beauty of the earth It is to listen through a storm to the still, small voice within. Let us worship together. Our first hymn is number 92, Mysterious Presence, Source of All. Please rise as you are able. Please join in the responsive reading in the insert in your bulletin. It is entitled, We Raise Our Voices, and is by Jim Scott. For all of life and treasures we hold sacred.
We raise our voices.
For all relations we will meet with compassion and grace.
We raise our voices.
For justice and peace and the health of all the cycles of life. For the celebration of all who themselves cannot or may not.
We raise our voices.
For the remembrance of those who have taught, led, or inspired us.
We raise our voices.
For this moment in time to share the wealth of each other's presence.
We raise our voices.
For the power of our collective voice and concerted action with vision and love.
We raise our voices.
Be seated. We have been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of the church. This morning's offering will now be given and received.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jan and Willis. That was beautiful. Thanks. Our reading today is from a book by Virginia Ramey Mollenkopf that's entitled Omnigender, A Trans Religious Approach. It's an excellent book that I would recommend to anyone interested in transgender and religion relations and topics. This is from a chapter and a section called Neither Male Nor Female, Understanding the Complexities of Sex and Gender. And it's also a subheading titled The Gender Crisis. Western society is currently involved in a crisis of gender definition. Throughout all the centuries of heteropatriarchy, the concept of two opposite sexes has served as a boundary to hold in place the established patterns of power. The binary gender construct has dictated that real males must naturally be drawn to those attitudes, behaviors, and roles that any given society considers masculine, including sexual attraction to females only. And real females must naturally be drawn to those attitudes, behaviors, and roles any given society considers feminine, including sexual attraction to males only. Any person who deviates from these standards is a gender transgressor, outside the pale of genuine humanity, undeserving of full human consideration. The binary gender construct is assumed to be the way things ought to be in the order of creation, the will of God, unchangeable and beyond question. So what's wrong with the time-honored concept that men and women are women and viva la difference? Plenty. In the first place, the binary gender construct ignores or contradicts factual reality. Many heterosexual men are not drawn to masculine attitudes, behaviors, and roles, and many heterosexual women are not drawn to feminine behaviors, attitudes, and roles. Bisexual and homosexual women and men are not attracted exclusively to the opposite sex. I can now acknowledge that to the degree I feel myself to be a masculine woman, I am a transgendered, not transsexual. I feel myself to be female, all right, but masculine at the same time. So that dresses and skirts feel rather ridiculous in this, despite the fact that as a child I was not allowed to wear overalls, shorts, or pants. I played with the boys a great deal and I defended my older brother with my fists, but always I was wearing a skirt. One of the greatest benefits of coming out publicly as a lesbian was that I could go through my closets and give away all my dresses and skirts except for a few Gertrude Steinish floor-length skirts that somehow seemed less of an affront to my nature. As many as 4% of all births are intersexual, babies with indeterminate genitals or with both male and female genitals, sometimes internal and difficult to discover. Some people with apparently normal male bodies sense themselves to be female. Some people with female bodies sense themselves to be male. And these people are willing to cross-dress permanently and use hormonal or surgical means to become or pass as the gender they feel themselves to be. Some people sense that they are heterosexual but two-spirited or bi-gendered, so they cross-dress periodically in order to express all aspects of their nature. And some two-spirited people are homosexual or bisexual. Some people look like normal males or females but are chromosomally different from the statistical norm of double X for females and XY for males. Differences in hormone levels and how the cells of some newborns have resisted or responded to hormones prenatally can also be factors in what is often called gender ambiguity. Because common speech often confuses biological categories with gender assignment, gender identity, and gender expression, enormous diversity is possible. I do not doubt that there are people who would read through this paragraph and still not find an adequate description of themselves. For their sake, I will add a category of otherwise. In the face of so much diversity, it is no wonder that the binary gender paradigm is in the process of collapse. For our meditation today, I took out the hymn that we normally do here, and I'm going to do a song that some of us might know anyway. It's called Filled with Loving Kindness. So I invite you to to do whatever it is that you need to do to meditate, whether it's to close your eyes or to open your eyes or to stand, to hold your hands in a certain way, whatever you want to do. If you want to sing along, if you want, we'll do two verses of this. And this is called Filled with Loving Kindness.
May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be filled with loving kindness.
Right. I hope you're prepared for stream of consciousness today, because that's kind of what it's going to be. I'm just going to be talking off the top of my head, and I hope that I don't rattle on too long and talk about things that may not make sense. But when I try to prepare for these sermons, I always go in with the intention of writing it down and, you know, writing everything, making it perfect, and it never happens. I just can't seem to do it, so... So I'm going to talk on the topic of justice is what love looks like in public and what I learned from attending the Pride Parade again this year. Some of you might be saying, oh, he's going to talk about that stuff again. Why doesn't he talk about something else? But this is a topic that is dear to my heart, and this is what I want to talk about this time. Justice is what love looks like in public. Isn't that a great line? It's a very profound line. It's not mine, but it is profound. It's from Dr. Cornel West, who I might say I'm his biggest admirer, but I'm sure there are people that are as big or bigger admirers of him than I am. Cornel West talks about catastrophic love, unconditional love, about how the fact that he is a blues man in the life of the spirit and a jazz man in the life of the intellect. And what does he mean by that? He means that he is a blues man in the fact that his life and the life of African Americans and those people who live in the margins is a life of struggle. It's a life of catastrophe. It's a life of constantly being put down. But people in these margins and in these situations don't respond with violence usually. They don't respond with counterterrorism. He said, there's no African-American equivalent of Al-Qaeda, but they respond as blues men with a lyrical and a musical appreciation, a way to talk about their struggles in a lyrical fashion. And he's a jazz man in the mind of the intellect because he improvises. He learns how to improvise and to use his mind in creative ways to throw off what he refers to as the Jim Crow and Jane Crow society. So justice flows from this unconditional love. People in the margins don't desire to lord over other people and dominate the people that dominate them. People in the margins desire all to be equal and all to be loved. So this manifests itself in public. So justice is what love looks like in public. And if you have ever been to a pride parade, you'll know that justice is exactly what love looks like in public. I mentioned in the song, Filled with Loving Kindness, the last line is, may I be whole, or may we be whole. For me, going to the pride parade is a holy pilgrimage. It is a holy and religious experience, because if you get down to the root word of the word, the root definition of the meaning of holy, some dictionaries would say it's sanctified or being with God or being of God, but that's not the original definition of the word holy. It's not the essential definition. And that definition is to be whole, to be who you are always and forever at that moment. And that's exactly what being at the Pride Parade is. It's being whole. It's being who we are at that moment and that time. It's feeling safe. It's feeling pride for who we are. Rights for the LGBTQ community is the premier civil rights issue of the day. Many leaders would reject that, to say that some people have commandeered the movement, the civil rights movement, for these rights. But as Melissa Lacewell Harris, or Melissa Harris Perry now, excuse me, she was the Ware lecturer last year at the UUA General Assembly. She is a Unitarian Universalist and a political scientist. She spoke this year at the Human Rights Campaign's clergy call and said this, my work is based in the empirical, not the spiritual. As a political scientist, I like data points. I like survey analysis. So what am I doing in here in an empirical social scientist, straight girl at a clergy call around LGBT issues, she asked. Her answer, I believe that the struggle for equal human and civil rights for lesbian, gay, transgender, bisexual, same-sex-loving, gender non-conforming, and queer persons is the civil rights agenda of our time. And she said, faith must be part of the work we're doing. Faith must be part of the work we're doing. How do we integrate faith into the secular world? First of all, I'd like to make note that I don't believe in the word secular. I believe that all life is religious in some way, whether you're a Unitarian Universalist, whether you're another faith. But how can we live in a duality that's one time you're religious, and here we're in, maybe when we go to church, we think we're in the religious realm. We go outside in the world, and there's the secular realm. Well, it's all the same. And what we do in here, what we do out there, depends on what we do in here. And even if you don't attend church, or you don't have religious feelings, the universe is the universe, and it all operates together. So to make these distinctions of faith and secular don't make sense to me. Now I'm going to pick on some people here, Catholic bishops, to be specific. After the vote in the New York General Assembly that gave marriage equality in New York State, Archbishop Dolan, who is from St. Louis originally, remarked that he was just very depressed because it was such a bad day that, you know, he was really not feeling well and didn't really want to talk about it. Because although he loves gay people, I have friends who are gay, I love gay people. You know, it doesn't make me homophobic. Well, wrong. To be prejudiced, to deny people rights that are basic human rights, it's not love. It's not love. There is no way that you could ever mask what the men of the church are proclaiming as love. These men of faith are practicing not a faith, but an immoral judgment, an evil judgment, in my opinion. I wanted to share with you a letter that I wrote to Cardinal George in Chicago. And he came out with several, he is the president of the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops, and came out with several disparaging letters to give some kind of theological or intellectual reason as to why gay people are not real persons. So I wanted to counteract that to him, and to counteract the fact that he believes that women are not real persons. When the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops equated women who attempt ordination with pedophilia, this was a severe blow to all right-thinking persons, to all people who have an intellectual capacity. Anybody that can think for themselves knows that this is just insane. So shortly here, the letter goes, "Dear Francis," I don't like titles, I don't use titles, so. People call me Mr., I say, "No, my name is John, my birth certificate doesn't say Mr. on there, so sorry. I'm writing to you as a person who once proudly proclaimed," I should preface this too, that I'm a recovering Catholic, so for the others out there, so some people know that, some people don't, so. "I'm writing to you as a person who once proudly proclaimed my faith as a Roman Catholic, who took seriously the doctrines of Jesus of Nazareth and believed that he was present to all assembled who freely partook of the holy meal that Jesus asked his followers to do this in remembrance of me. It is with sadness and despair that I must inform you that I no longer believe in the church. But it is with immense joy and fulfillment that I have now discovered that the true meaning of Jesus of Nazareth's invitation to remember is to feed each other, both spiritually and physically, and without regard to any perceived external differences. I believe the church you proclaim has perverted the truth by denying a woman's right to choose her own reproductive health, denying God's call to women who summon them to be ordained, and denying a dignity and humanity and equality to all persons who are created to be gay, lesbian, transgender, and those who question their sexual identity and their gender identity. You and your brother bishops commit spiritual violence against another person's humanity and true self, and it's an immoral act, an evil act. When you look around the world and search for God, all you see are men who are dressed in scarlet and red, your brother bishops. When I look for God, I see women, men, children, and all shades in between. The church's denial of marriage equality is a denial of God's creation, and your claims of the destruction of marriage sound like the Pharisees who sought to protect their own claims and feared the destruction of their hold on power. Your denial of ordination to women is intellectually lazy, theologically nonsense, and ultimately a denial of God's own call to service. If this letter offends you and your brother bishops, then I am most grateful, because you offend me and all who seek justice in this life. I therefore declare myself excommunicated and thereby free from servitude and religious slavery. I am now, nor have I ever been, in part subject to your interpretation of morality and the natural order. Sincerely, your brother in the Christ of the margins, John Mark Francis Herndon." I got no response to that letter. I think I'm going to have to send it again. registered mail maybe this time. So as I said earlier, my presence at the Pride Parade was my religious pilgrimage. It's my yearly pilgrimage, my faith in action. Because here we see people who have no fear about who they are, no desire to hide in the margins, as we once proclaimed that these people should be. But I got to thinking about why does the heterosexual community resist? Why is there such an aversion to homosexuality? Why does this exist? I mean, you know, I would say as a straight person, I grew up with that mentality around me, but I never really accepted it. But I never really did anything about it either until now. But it was just something that was there. But why? And I got to thinking, why is this? And I think it is basically because it basically comes down to society and the church's opinion that women are second-class citizens. It all comes down to the patriarchy desire to make women less than human. Because it's, you know, men who might seem effeminate or women who are more masculine that this drives these people crazy when they see this and always resisting this lifestyle. So what I would like to move toward is more Virginia Raimi Mollenkott says is an omnigender society. I was thinking about that, about how, you know, we all have a masculine and a female part to us. And I went to see Harry Potter Friday, Friday morning, took off work, you know, went in work late and went with my wife and a couple friends to see it. And I cried at the end of it. I mean, who wouldn't cry at the end of it? So I love Broadway musicals. I don't deny that. Some people make fun of me because of that, but you know, there is a part in all of us that expresses either what society would say is a traditional feminine role or traditional masculine role. So what about attaining this omnigender status? Well, there's something to be said for that, but there's also something to be said for allowing people to express the gender that they desire, the gender that they feel that is theirs. Friday night, in an attempt to divert myself from having to work on this, I turned on the television. There's a TV program that's one of my favorites back in the 1980s and 90s called Star Trek: The Next Generation. I don't know if I'm sure you've seen it. I know all the shows by heart, and there was an episode that struck me that night. It was on Friday night. That was just perfect for what I was preparing for this talk. In the episode, they go to a planet where everyone on the planet has no gender. And some people in the planet, though, choose a gender. And when this is discovered, they are arrested, they are prosecuted, and they are counseled, and they are given some, I can't remember what they call it, psychogenic treatment. Sounds like Michelle Bachman and her husband, I think. But these people are reprogrammed to not pay attention to gender. So one of the, you know, predictably in the story, one of the people in the on this planet falls in love with one of the people in the Star Trek Starship Enterprise, and it's about his trying to get justice for this person. But it's too late, though. By the end, they've already arrested her, put her on trial, and already started the treatment so that she no longer recognizes him or recognizes what she has done as being normal. The judge in the trial states that, you know, we're loving these people. We're doing what's right for these people because they are sick and they are perverted and they need to be treated. So it's a perfect mirror for our society today, or at least the society that was back then. This was a kind of a cutting edge thing for, I think, 1991 it was. So But I think things are changing, I hope. I think, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the closet is pretty far open now. And I think that door, that closet, is not going to shut ever again. You know, things are changing, and it's not going back to the way it was before. And people like us need to guard that and protect it. The last time I talked to you back in March, I told you about how, and I got Lane's permission to say this too, so I'll talk about this again, about how I consider myself a straight queer. And I'll explain that a little bit. This comes from the readings that I did with Dr. Carter Hayward, who's a theologian in, used to be at the Episcopal Divinity School in Massachusetts. She's retired now. And she says, "The term queer, as I'm using it, let me be clear, is not simply a code word for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and other ways of being at odds with dominant gender culture. Queer is not simply a reversal of a negative epithet so often hurled against GLBT folks in homophobic culture. Queer is not simply a synonym for being odd, unusual, or out there. It's bigger than GLBT lives. Queer is more than a linguistic reversal. And queerness is way deeper than merely odd. It's public solidarity in the struggle for sexual and gender justice, and of irrepressibly making connections to other struggles for justice, compassion, and reconciliation." And she said in their article that Episcopal Divinity School is, by the grace of God, a queer seminary. Well, I would say that First Unitarian Church in Alden is, by the grace of God, a queer church. So there's my stream of consciousness for today. So take it as it is. I'd like to close, however, with the last paragraph of the what I had Jennifer read this morning as the call to worship. I used to not like the word worship at all, because to me worship meant that you were subjecting yourself to someone else, that you were, you know, they're putting something, some supernatural power ahead of your own humanity. But I've come to see that worship is a little bit deeper than that. So that's why I like this paragraph that I had Jennifer read today. And the end goes, "Worship is loneliness seeking communion. It is thirsty land crying out for rain. Worship is kindred fire within our hearts. It moves through deeds of kindness and through acts of love. Worship is the mystery within us reaching out to the mystery beyond. It is an articulate silence yearning to speak. It is the window of the moment open to the sky of the eternal." And what we did, those of us who attended the Pride Parade, was indeed worship. Thank you. And our last hymn today is number 169, "We Shall Overcome," number 169. Someday.
shall all be free. We shall all be free. We shall all be free someday. We shall live in peace. We shall live in peace. We shall live in peace someday. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we shall live in peace someday. Our
benediction today is an interpretation of the 23rd Psalm. This is called the Religious Humanist 23rd Psalm, and I dedicate this to Rose Hoshiko. Life itself is my guide. I shall not be denied its sustaining power. The green earth provide me with lavish nourishment. Cool, still pools of water refresh my spirit. A deep intuition leads me along a path that is true for the sake of existence itself. Even though I walk through a valley where dark shadows prevent me from knowing where life finally leads in death, ultimately I will not fear, for the energy of the universe is within me. The tools by which I am kept from wandering off into despair, they are a comfort to me. Even in the face of threats to my well-being and my very life, the spirit of life nourishes me, honor me with its presence, and reminds me that I really have more than I need. Please be seated for our postlude.